welcome our first guest this evening, and that is Omar Farah. He's a staff attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights. He's also part of the Guantanamo Global Justice Initiative. He represents Guantanamo prisoners in habeas corpus challenges and in resettlement efforts. Omar, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
First of all, maybe tell our listeners a bit about your involvement with the prisoners that are still in Guantanamo.
Sure. For roughly the last 5 years, I've been representing Guantanamo prisoners in the days after 2008 Supreme Court decision of Boumediene v. Bush, where the prisoners won the right to challenge the legality of their detention. I was primarily focused on litigating those cases in federal court in Washington, D.C. And as we will probably talk during the interview, the doors of the courthouse are largely closed now, and so most of the work that we're doing is public advocacy, you know, not unlike this, to make you know, your listeners and others aware of just how dire and bleak the situation is. You know, the Center for Constitutional Rights has been litigating and working on these issues essentially since the prison opened. I joined them last year and picked up my work with them.
Well, maybe you can give us a status of what's happening. You know, I'm sure listeners have read reports. It's not a headline in our papers or on the evening news, but you have an unknown number, a large number. It's been conceded, but a large number of prisoners held at Guantanamo are now in the midst of a hunger strike that has gone as long as 2 months. But maybe you can give us the particulars of what we do know.
That's right. To the extent your listeners have seen reports of this, they'll see that the government itself is now conceding that roughly 40 prisoners are on a hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay. That number has been revised upwards almost on a daily basis for the last several weeks by the Department of Defense. And one interpretation of that is that the hunger strike is growing. The other, and I think the more accurate interpretation, is that the government is finally yielding to what the prisoners themselves have been saying since early February, which is that there is a mass hunger strike happening across the two primary detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay, which is Camp 6 and Camp 5. Camp 6 itself houses roughly 130 prisoners. And so what I've heard directly from my clients, including men like Fahed Ghazi, for example, is that all of the prisoners in Camp 6, for example, except those who are too old and too weak because of other medical conditions, are participating in the hunger strike. And we're starting to witness the predictable and dire consequences of that course of action. Men are collapsing. The Center for Constitutional Rights represents Ghaleb al-Bahani, for example. He's a diabetic. He's been told that his blood sugar levels are fluctuating so wildly that that they fear for his life. Increasingly, prisoners are being segregated into Camp 5 for more monitoring, and by the government's own numbers, roughly 11 prisoners are now being force-fed, and at Guantanamo, that means nasogastric intubation, being strapped down to a restraint chair, having a rubber tube inserted into your nose, and then liquid dietary supplements being pumped into your stomach. So we're talking now at a point where the situation is bleak, and if something doesn't change, you know, I fear you'll be doing a follow-up story about the horrible deaths of a prisoner, either by suicide or by just expiring through the hunger strike, or even just through despair, which we know from last year with the death of Adnan Latif does in fact kill people.
Omar, tell our listeners a bit about the conditions and the open-ended nature of the prison sentences or lack of sentences at Guantanamo that has led to this hunger strike.
It's an important point, and it's one that's overlooked. You know, the common perception, I think, is that torture has ended at Guantanamo Bay, and while some of the more obvious forms of torture, you know, physical abuse and other forms of torture have ended, you know, indefinite detention without charge or trial is indeed torture in any common understanding of the term. I think, you know, most people can conceive of what it would be like to be beaten up by someone more powerful. We can all sort of get our minds around the shame that we would feel if we were stripped naked in front of others. It's very hard for people who have their freedom to contemplate what it means to be locked up in a steel and concrete cell for a decade, to not really know why you're there to begin with, and to not know when, if ever, you'll leave. And that's the torment that is happening across the prison. And I know from visiting and meeting with my clients that, you know, that uncertainty is destroying them over time. And we were pleased to hear the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights on Friday come out and decisively condemn the situation at Guantanamo Bay for precisely this reason. And she was saying that there's no other outcome you could possibly expect other than this kind of hunger strike, this kind of protest, when people are locked up in that kind of condition. So, you know, there's a degree of existential torment that these men are dealing with daily. And your listeners should recall that more than half of them have been unanimously cleared for release by every national security and law enforcement agency in the U.S. government that has, you know, a stake in this issue, and they're just trapped there in this limbo. It's devastating.
So more than half of the 166 detainees we know about at Guantanamo have been cleared?
That is correct. The second part of the executive order that the president signed on his second day of office in his last term, that ordered that the prison be closed in 1 year, the second part of it was required or created an interagency task force that would review, do a comprehensive review of all of the evidence in the government's possession about the men at Guantanamo, and arrive at a disposition either that they should be charged by a military commission or they should be held in an indefinite detention, which in and of itself is grossly unjust, but putting that aside. And then the third disposition that the prisoner could receive would be approval for transfer. And in order to get approval for transfer, you had to have unanimous consent of the law enforcement and national security agencies who have a mandate to review the Guantanamo cases. And that included the Department of Defense, Justice, State, Homeland Security, the Office of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, all of the agencies that, you know, as American citizens, we rely on to guard our national security, all of those agencies unanimously approved 86 of the men for transfer, and they've been trapped there for the last 3 years.
We're speaking tonight here on Counterpoint with Omar Farah. He's a staff attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights Guantanamo Global Justice Initiative, representing Guantanamo prisoners and their habeas corpus challenges and in resettlement efforts. Omar, given the fact that a commission appointed by President Obama has recommended the release of these prisoners, and they are in this limbo status, and with this hunger strike ongoing, very dangerous to the lives of many, what can be done now to intervene here? President Obama, members of his administration, the judiciary, or members of Congress, who can intervene to bring some semblance of justice to these men?
Sure. To be fair, all three branches of government have utterly failed on Guantanamo policy. You know, at this late stage, it's less important, I think, to talk about the courts, because, you know, they closed the door on these cases a long time ago. So for example, it's the law of the land that the government's inculpatory evidence against a Guantanamo detainee should be presumed to be accurate unless the prisoner can overturn that rebuttal. So it's a complete inversion of the basic sort of notion of fairness that you're innocent until you're proven guilty. But putting the courts aside, and the Congress has been equally hostile towards the Guantanamo detainees. The annual defense appropriation bill, the National Defense Authorization Act, has been a vehicle for Congress to express its disfavor for the president's plan to close Guantanamo. And so there's these very onerous restrictions that complicate the ability of the president to transfer. But this issue, this current crisis, begins and ends with President Obama. And as difficult as the framework is for him to operate in, he has sufficient latitude to significantly draw down the prison population in rapid order by transferring the men. The National Defense Authorization Act includes provisions that would permit him to sidestep the worst of the transfer restrictions that he often complains about, including in his signing statement. It permits him, for example, to transfer a prisoner if he determined that it was in the national security interest to do so. But if you look at all of the public statements about the NDAA from the administration, all of the complaints that they make, I mean, that's essentially the very language that they use. They say that the transfer restrictions aren't in the national security interest of the United States. So if the president were committed to transferring the prisoners, at a minimum transferring the 86 men that have already been cleared for release, he needs only turn to the provisions that are already included in existing legislation. But he's determined, and he deserves harsh criticism for this. He's determined that other political priorities are more important. And you know, none of us should be naive. Of course, that's the nature of the presidency. That sort of transactional politics is par for the course. But in this case, there are literally men's lives hanging in the balance. And so until the president returns to his, you know, initial instincts, which were right in 2008, if you remember how vigorously he campaigned against Guantanamo, if he returns to those instincts, steps out of what I think is a cold political calculus about where to spend the influence of his office, and stands up for what is a basic, you know, it's really, you know, stands up for the closure of what's one of the worst excesses of the Bush-Cheney administration, I think there is a chance that, you know, that the end game that we're seeing playing out at Guantanamo won't involve the demise of a great many of the prisoners. And that's certainly what we're hoping we'll see. And so your viewers, I hope, will come away with the clear understanding that the public has to put pressure on the president and force him to internalize some of the political costs that I think right now he's ignoring. And those costs are the ones that are associated with really the horrible demise of a group of men, most of whom have never been charged with a crime or tried, and over half of whom have been cleared for release.
Omar, we're out of time. We're going to move on to discuss some of the work of another organization that's trying to bring attention to this matter. But before we say goodnight, Omar, give our listeners the web address for your organization, the Center for Constitutional Rights, and what they can find there.
Yeah, I hope listeners take a moment to go to ccrjustice.org. There's information there not only about CCR's cases, but also about some of the men who are detained, and I think that's an important part of this. There are, you know, there are 166 individuals there, and people need to know their names and who they are and their individual stories, I think, in order to take proper action. So I hope people take a moment to go and visit the site.
Thanks so much for joining us, Omar, and I hope we can stay in touch about this issue and get an update, hopefully, on a better odds that this will be resolved in some fair and equitable way. Thank you.
I would be happy to. You're doing important work covering this. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Omar. Bye-bye. That's Omar Farah, staff attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights. We're now going to move to discuss the public advocacy side of this hunger strike of the Guantanamo detainees. We'll be joined by Jeremy Varone in just a few minutes. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with that portion of the interview on this important topic. Board, and we continue our conversation right now about the ongoing hunger strike among Guantanamo detainees with Jeremy Varone. He's a professor of history at New School University in New York City and an organizer with the group Witness Against Torture. Jeremy, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jeremy, just say a quick word, if you would, about your group, Witness Against Torture.
Okay, it started in 2005 when 25 American activists physically went to the detention camp at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, to protest the camp's existence and to express their sympathy for the men detained there. And George Bush had said, if you have doubts about Guantanamo, why don't you come visit it yourself? And they took George Bush at his word, visited the prison camp, registered a protest. Then when they came back to the United States, formed a sustained organization that has used lobbying, demonstration, letter writing, petitioning, and nonviolent direct action to try to close the prison camp.
Well, what is your group's stance right now in terms of this hunger strike and public advocacy on behalf of these inmates, many of whom have not been charged or tried and are being held in limbo here, despite the fact that the commission has said they should be released?
Right. I mean, we see the hunger strike as a tragic but logical and predictable consequence of a colossal policy failure. I mean, Obama promised to do the right thing, which was to close Guantanamo, but in fact he hasn't. And he's really made indefinite detention without charge or trial the policy. And then the people who are being held there are being held in a sickening limbo. They're likening their detention more and more towards, to a kind of living death, and want some resolution of their fate one way or another. And then the hunger strike is a desperate cry for justice aimed at the American political system and the American public that have grown increasingly deaf to their cries. So we're concerned and horrified and acting with a tremendous sense of urgency, because you could easily conclude that this is the last best chance for there to be any real movement on policy towards the prison. So I can't imagine what it's like to endure what they're enduring, but rationally I can understand why the detainees would be so desperate. And then our basic goal as a group is to communicate with the powers that be to let them know that we still are concerned about this issue, to act in solidarity with the hunger strikers in hopes that they learn about our actions and it gives them some strength and courage, and to try to sort of rally the conscience of the American people to express itself, you know, on this issue, and not have Obama believe that nobody any longer cares, because that's absolutely not true.
We just got off the phone before our conversation began with Omar Farah, staff attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights, and he squarely put the onus of these prisoners' plight on the shoulders of President Obama. And from what you just said, I gather you are similarly determined to put pressure on President Obama to take some action here. What is it your organization is doing to rally public support for a change in U.S. policy as it pertains to these Guantanamo detainees? And what are you asking them to do in terms of contacting Congress or the White House?
Right. I mean, our position has remained essentially unchanged since we founded. You know, the closure of Guantanamo, a definitive end of American torture, justice for the victims, and accountability for the torturers. And then now there's a new context, albeit a tragic one, in which I think, you know, those points are sort of registering or echoing more broadly in the American political culture. And then one thing we've done is a week-long solidarity fast that over 100 people in the United States and some people around the world participated in. We also have what we're calling a rolling fast, where every day a handful of people are signing up to not eat food for 24 hours, and we're going to sustain this as long as the hunger strike is going. And then we're having an active calling campaign to the White House, a letter-writing campaign where people can write letters to the detainees in Guantanamo. We've had regular vigils, and then on Thursday we're having what we're calling a National Day of Action to close Guantanamo. And then there's going to be rallies and vigils in hopefully two dozen cities at least, biggish ones in New York and Washington, D.C., Chicago, Los Angeles. And then it's really been inspiring how all these, you know, much smaller communities have had some people sort of self-organize vigils. There's going to be one in New Haven, which is, you know, in Connecticut at least. And our website, www.witnesstorture.org, lists a lot of these events, has a sheet instructing you how you can write a Guantanamo detainee, a sort of sample script of what you might say to Department of Defense if you call them. So we're trying to use all of the conventional tools in the, you know, toolkit of citizen democracy. And we've been working very closely with Center for Constitutional Rights, who is sort of like the legal arm of you know, the whole movement to close Guantanamo, and we're sort of the grassroots complement. And then other groups have endorsed or signed on to the National Day of Action, including the National Religious Campaign Against Torture, World Can't Wait, and a variety of other groups.
You know, it's sad and alarming to me is that if this was happening in any other country in the world, you know, whether it would have been Russia, China, Japan, Iran, Venezuela, or any of, you know, the United States sees as a hostile nation, there would be outrage among people in the U.S. government and among many of its people. But here in this situation with the Guantanamo detainees in legal limbo for up to 11 years, there is no sense of urgency, outrage, or even, you know, much in the way of news coverage about what's happening here. I think it's outrageous, and I know many listeners do, and of course, you're taking action on this. In closing, I would ask you, Jeremy, to give our listeners the website for your group, and there may be some details there about the demonstration that's going to take place this Thursday.
Yeah, again, it's www.witnesstorture.org. And then if you click the event button, you will see the list of all the local vigils and the contact person, New Haven's, on there. We have all kinds of links to recent articles about the hunger strike and various resources that you can, you know, mobilize to make your voice heard.
All right. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us, Jeremy, and for your important work. And I'm sure many people will be visiting the website, getting more information. And the protest is this Thursday, April 11th, 12 to 1 p.m. at the Federal Courthouse, 141 Church Street in New Haven. That's this Thursday.
Terrific. And send us pictures if you have this event. We'll post them and have it all go viral, okay?
Okay. Thanks. I know so there's some folks listening who will be attending. Thank you very much.
Terrific.
Bye-bye.
Yep, thank you.
That was Jeremy Verone, professor of history at the New School University in New York and an organizer with the group Witness Against Torture, discussing the plight of detainees in legal limbo at Guantanamo, many now embarked on a hunger strike for some up to 2 months now.